Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. Brian is back with you tomorrow, I believe. But yeah, I get to start my day off with you. So thank you so much for letting me sit in the seat. You know, I love when you join me. 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. And I would tell you that you could also, if you can't make a phone call, you can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. No S, Mary Walter Radio. But X is down. Best I can tell, it's down. At least it is for on every device I have here. There is no X to be had. So maybe that's not a good option. But I'll keep checking it. But when it comes back up, if you want to leave me comments, you can at Mary Walter Radio. Also, my podcast Tuesday night, so tomorrow night. It will be at 7:15 p.m. Eastern time, and it is live on Rumble, YouTube, and Getter. It is a live cast where you can participate. Just look for Mary Walter Radio. Audio is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker. All right, let's talk about some immigration. We're also going to talk about something that the feds can do with your savings, your retirement fund. I had no idea about, but Theo Wold does. He is the acting assistant attorney general in the Office of Legal Policy at the Department of Justice. Deputy assistant was. He is also deputy assistant to the president for the domestic policy during the first Trump administration. Was deputy chief counsel to United States Senator Mike Lee and on the Senate Judiciary Committee, former Idaho Solicitor General. And I believe he is also with Heritage. So this man needs a business card that he has to carry around with him in like a wagon. Theo Wold is joining us. Find him on X at Real Theo Wold. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Mary. It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There are so many questions. I saw your resume. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have so many questions for this guy because I think there's just so much we can learn from you. So one of the first things that I wanted to start out with is Wall Street being able to seize your retirement funds. And I thought, this can't be right. And so I'm reading about this. This is crazy. If there's a financial crash, so I would assume like 08, I don't know, we're talking 08 or are we talking like the Great Depression, but they can take your savings because apparently your investment funds, you don't really own. What is happening here? Could you explain this to me?
Yeah, so there's a body of law that most Americans have no idea exists. I would tell you, Mary, most members of the United States Congress have no idea exists. It's called the Uniform Commercial Code, and it really sort of governs all the ways in which financial institutions or commercial transactions, including when you swipe your debit card or your credit card at a pay terminal at, you know, Walmart or the gas station, how all of that functions as a body of law. And the UCC has this very strange interplay between state law and then federal oversight. So already we're kind of way down in the weeds of who gets to say how this entire system works. And the UCC was amended in the 1990s with the input from large financial institutions, mostly on Wall Street, hedge funds, big banks, who were already starting to take note of the changes in fintech. how quickly, with improved technology, including with the internet, can transactions occur? And one of the things that they wanted was to make sure that there was actual control on their part over securities. That's stocks, that's bonds, that's any kind of tradable equity, especially if it's got so-called paper behind it. And the real issue here is there was the formation of this, this won't surprise your listeners, of a new quasi-government, quasi-privately held entity called the Depository Trust Company. And all you need to know about that is the DTC is the actual entity that holds all of your stock. So in a financial crisis, the real issue here is the DTC holds your paper. You have an interest in that paper. That's what you're buying and trading and selling online. But the DTC actually holds those documents. And what the UCC Article 8, that's what was amended in the 1990s. What that says is in a major financial meltdown, the banks, the financial institutions, the trading houses, some large VCs or equity funds, they get to hold that paper in a bankruptcy proceeding before you do. So your asset is their collateral when creditors come calling. And we saw versions of this when Lehman Brothers melted down, and there's been no reform. No one in Congress has taken this up as an issue. No one in state governments has taken this up as an issue. So at the end of the day, I know it sounds conspiratorial, Mary, but yes, it is true. The DTC owns your stock, not you.
Okay, so one thing you know you can learn about me is I love a good conspiracy. Like, I have my tinfoil hat polished and ready to go at all times. But so to me, this sounds kind of like, though, when I put money in a bank and I have money, say, in my savings account, right? That I know that that money isn't really there. I know that the bank is using that money for other things, right? So it's not really sitting there. However, if I go in there and say, I would like to cash out and go to a different bank, they can give me a check right then and there to go take to it so I can get, I have access to my money. So, okay, so when you say some kind of crisis, how big of a crisis does it have to be? Can it be a personal crisis, like that just that institution's having issues and like, oops, we overextended ourselves, sorry, you can't have your money? Or is it like depression, stock market crash type of crisis?
So far, what we know as this has played out in real time, it's a little bit of both. With Lehman Brothers, obviously that was the beginning of a global meltdown in the world economy that hit the United States particularly hard. But Silicon Valley Bank from just a few years ago, that was sort of a single institution failure. And in both instances, those institutions were able to use Article 8 to freeze, to divert, and essentially make inaccessible the securities that were held by individual investors, but were through those institutions. So they went to the DTC and said, freeze all of these, and we're going to use that as collateral to pay down with our creditors first.
Okay, so very concerned about, I'm sorry to ask so many questions about this. So, because a lot of Americans have things, you know, 401ks or stocks or bonds and in all sorts of different forms of, you know, market money, money market funds, that type of stuff. You have your financial manager and they sometimes buy into a fund. So how long can they hold my money for? How long can I not get at my money to pay my bills?
I mean, in the Lehman Brothers instance, Mary, this is, I don't want to frighten anyone, but it was essentially indefinitely until the institution failed. And what was left then, had to go through the bankruptcy proceeding process. So the main point is, I think under Article 8, what was contemplated was you will get access to your securities. You'll just be last in line. And the reform efforts that are being proposed at both the state level and before Congress, they all really want to revisit the ordering of credit seeking so that individual retail investors, customers, are not put last in this process, but are actually put first. That's the main issue here. It's fine for the DTC to hold the paper. That's fine. It's fine for institutional players to ensure that they're able to make these transactions quickly, especially with the way the pace of global market exchange. The real issue is that individual investors and customers shouldn't be put last. Right. In a potential bankruptcy proceeding, they should be first.
What's interesting, and just one last thing on this, as you were saying that, all I could think about was when the unions go belly up because they mismanage the funds, and then I have to bail them out. Because we have to, and we also bailed out Ukrainian pensions too, if I remember correctly. So when it comes to American citizens, we come last all the way around.
Couldn't say it better myself, Mary. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And again, like with the instance with the Ukrainian union, here the real issue is this was done in modifying a body of law. It wasn't proposed before Congress. The UCC is something that, again, all the states agree to. They can make modifications. These are legal experts influenced by financial experts who came to these conclusions. Very little input from the people's representatives.
Yeah, all the experts who know better to, what to do with my money than I would. Wow, crazy. Okay, we have a lot more to get to with you. I want to talk about some laws that you have had input into in Idaho regarding immigration. And then if we have time, I also would like to talk to you about the FBI opening 1,200 assessments of sensitive figures like politicians, journalists, clergy, we don't know who, and they didn't need any kind of, they don't have like any kind of legal procedure to go through in order to do this. So the spying just abounded, in my humble opinion, under Joe Biden. So if you have time, we're going to get to all of that with Theo Wold coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Mary Walter sitting in for Brian with my guest, Theo Wold. He was the Acting Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Policy at the DOJ and Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy during Trump's first administration, and the former Idaho Solicitor General. Thank you so much for staying with me. One of the things that you have done, you've worked with some Idaho lawmakers to come up with a slate of immigration bills. And tell us about what Idaho is looking to do here.
Yeah, look, I think one thing that a lot of folks miss is there is a role for state governments to play in immigration enforcement. Article 2, Section 8 of the Constitution, just to get a little nerdy here, it lays out very clearly that immigration law, the uniform naturalization of foreign nationals into the country, that belongs to Congress exclusively. And the Supreme Court has interpreted that many times over the years to say, yep, this is a power that belongs to the federal government. But states can cooperate with the federal government's immigration authorities. So one form is takes, Mary, is something called the 287G process or agreement. That's between ICE and local and state law enforcement, where local and state law enforcement can be deputized to use some of their resources, their detention capacity, their investigatory resources to assist ICE in finding criminal illegal aliens that may be in our communities. I think a lot of people have heard about that process. What we are focused on in Idaho is the other side of illegal immigration that's often really obscured for the average American, and that's the total cost. The total cost, especially in resources that everyday Americans use for their families. So healthcare, housing, education, and then also the costs associated in the criminal justice system. So, for example, we don't know in Idaho, and this is true in most states, how many illegal alien minor children are enrolled in our schools. And for a lot of Americans, they're presented with, you know, education levies, tax bonds, proposals to raise money to pay for new schools, to hire new teachers. But they're never told whether or not that growth that's demanding that the new schools, the new teachers, right, is because we've matriculated more American students or we've got more foreign national students in our schools. So these bills were all targeted at making those costs more transparent for the average American so that they can come to the decision about whether they want more illegal immigration or not.
Yeah, transparency is good. We want more transparency, right?
it seems like a no-brainer to me. When I was sitting down to write these proposals a year ago, I was like, yeah, I mean, I think most people want to know. You know, for example, Idaho is one of the fastest growing states in the country. It is number one right now. And a lot of our infrastructure is, you know, was built in the 50s. It's a little out of date. And one of those parts of our infrastructure are our county jails and our state corrections facilities. And a lot of law enforcement officers have come before the voters saying, we need new facilities. We gotta match it with the growth. But what they haven't told the voters is that a lot of that growth and the people that they are detaining are criminally legal aliens from other countries. And most of them, the cost to the average Idaho taxpayer, what we are currently estimating is about $1,000, between $1,000 and $1,700 a day to house, feed, provide health care, gym equipment, and the like for an illegal alien criminal prisoner in our facilities. And I think people should know those numbers. And if they come to a different conclusion, like, yeah, I love this. I love giving philanthropic donations from my tax money to criminally illegal aliens. Okay, but I think most Americans would say the cost is just too high.
Absolutely. Just tell me how much of my taxes is going to school, you know, these kids and keep these prisoners in jail, all that stuff. Tell me how much is that and how much is for Americans. And let me decide if this is something I want to do. Getting a breakdown like that of your taxes would be phenomenal. I think it would change the game in this country. So I absolutely love this. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful idea. I'd love to see it go nationwide. But I live in New Jersey, so you know, that's not happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, somebody send help, please. Before we run out of time, we just have a couple of minutes here. But the GAO put out a report that was published last month. It wasn't made public. It's about the FBI investigative activities, oversight efforts of opening and conducting assessments. And Christopher Wray was apparently very big on spying on everyone, from what I can tell. It's a 57-page report, and it provided details on about 127,000 FBI assessments. I know we don't have a lot of time here, like 3 minutes. What can you tell me about us? What can you tell us about this?
I'm glad you're talking about this, Mary. So an FBI assessment, just the hard and fast for your listeners, it's one of the Bureau's sort of undefined investigative phases. It can open these without a criminal predicate. So that means the FBI doesn't think you've done anything wrong, but they're going to follow you, surveil you, listen to your communications anyway. And we know that a couple of field offices, like the Richmond, Virginia field office, were targeting Catholic parishes using these very assessment techniques. And we know that a number of high-level journalists, obviously conservative journalists, were being targeted the same way. So they don't necessarily need a grand jury subpoena to listen to your electronic communications or your information, and they can use human sources, your neighbors or other people, to spy and collect information on you as well. It's straight out of East Germany in the 1960s. But, you know, usually this leads to a part of a criminal investigation. So they, you know, they'll cauterize this kind of conduct on the back end. But in this instance, what the GAO said was there were over 1,000 high level, in particular conservative religious organizations or journalists or politicians who were targeted under these assessments. And they didn't lead to any criminal investigation. It was just to collect information.
So are we going to see any kind of repercussions? Is anyone ever going to be held responsible? Because all I keep hearing is all this stuff happened that was illegal, and you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But no one is ever held responsible. Could you give me a little bit of good news on a Monday morning?
I mean, I guess, you're asking, you're barking up the wrong tree, maybe, but let me try my best. The good news is that the FBI and the CIA are working together, Kash Patel and John Ratcliffe, to make some of these things now public or at least available to Congress for oversight. And I think they're very keen to create new protocols internally to govern this kind of conduct. Now, whether that's sufficient, whether it's sufficient to stop this from happening in, say, a President AOC's administration, I doubt it. But it's a good start. It's a good start.
Yeah, I just... You know, they are so quick, and they've already said, the left has already said, that once the Trump administration's over, we're going to come after you, we're going to punish everybody who worked with Donald Trump, we're going to investigate, we're going to do it, and they go on and on and on, because they know that nothing's going to happen to them. It's like Keith Ellison's sitting in that meeting going, go ahead, come after me, prosecute me, because he knows it's not going to happen. It's absolutely maddening. So
I mean, the Keith Ellison is the perfect imagery for that, because you're exactly right. He sat in the chair. He got the grilling from Senator Hawley, and he knew no one's ever going to bring an indictment. No one's ever going to impeach him. And the conduct of taking money and squashing investigations into fraud, abuse, and the waste of the American taxpayer dollars, nothing's ever going to come. There's no accountability at the end.
So annoying. Theo Wolt, great having you on. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a great week. And thank you for joining me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thank you.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We heard for 4 years the border is secure, while over 10 million illegal aliens cross the border and released in this country, not properly vetted. President Trump has given us the most secure border in the history of the nation. He did that in like 7 weeks, right? And when he did that, look at the thousands of lives he's saving. Griff, you've been down there plenty of times. You got record numbers of deportations of illegal aliens in this country, with the vast majority being criminals. We're doing all the right things.
Yeah, Tom Homan there. He's taking over. It's so interesting, the difference between Tom Homan and Greg Bovino, right? Two different groups, you know, but still with the same mission. And it was almost to me like they're doing bad cop, good cop. Like Tom Homan comes in, he's like, all right, you didn't like the last guy. Maybe he roughed you up a little bit. But, you know, I'm willing to work with you. So, you want to do it hard or you want to do it easy? Like, to me, it was just like a scene when Tom Homan came in and talked to Jacob Frey and talked to Tim Walz, you know, because Tom Homan is an alpha, right? He is an alpha, and he went in there to talk to those two soy boys. And I just think it just was like every 1940s criminal movie, you know, like mafia movie. It was good. That's how I have it in my head. But it's working. Like, Tom Homan seems to have it working. Have you noticed the on-demand riots? I've kind of slowed down in Minnesota. Have you noticed that? Like, it's no longer front page news. And I wonder if part of that is because of Nancy, Savannah Guthrie's mom, Nancy. I wonder if that is part of it. You know, we Americans have the attention span of golden retriever puppies, and so they moved on. But a couple of things we're going to go through with immigration here. If you want to jump in, 866-408-7669. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. Brian's back with you tomorrow. And X is back up, so we can all stop panicking. So if you can't pick up the phone and call, you just want to make a quick comment, I will try to multitask. Just tag me in a post on X at Mary Walter Radio, no S. Now, there's an internal ICE memo that is proposing changes to how they're going to do this. How are we going to get all these people out of the country? It's not going quickly enough. So they're making detention re-engineering a priority. And it would expand detention capacity, streamline processing, and accelerate removals of offenders who currently hang out in local jails for weeks, or they let them go free because they don't have any space. And they let these people go, if you've noticed, who, if you did the same thing, if you were accused of the same crime, there was a guy who is apparently wanted for murder in his home country and stabbed some woman in the back, an American in the back. He's here illegally, and they let him go. They let him walk. He just has to show up at his, you know, the next phase of wherever he goes from here. They let him out. If you were an American, if he were an American, he would be sitting in jail right now, right? So this two-tiered system of justice is actually multi-layered. And criminals now have more rights than you. It's crazy what we have created here. Well, not we. The left has created here. So if you want to jump in, 866-408-7669. Let's talk about Minnesota. Let's talk about Tom Homan. Here he is again on Fox and Friends Weekend talking about the success in Minnesota.
Well, look, it's a great success, but I don't expect any politician from that state to say, President Trump, congratulations, did a good job. Tom Homan did a good job. Bottom line is President Trump sent me up there to de-escalate, get state and local cooperation, and stop being a sanctuary state, and arrest illegal aliens with a focus on criminals. Over 4,000 arrests, done. De-escalation, done. Collaboration and cooperation with the prisons and the counties, done. When we leave Minnesota, it's a much safer city.
Yeah, it's a much safer city. And he also talked about they arrested 14 illegals with homicide convictions, 87 sexual assaults, mostly of children. And that's what these women don't understand, these crazy white liberal women. I wonder if it's because the woke mind virus, it's a contagion. And when they hang out together, because they hang in their own group, because anything outside of that thought process threatens them and they don't like it. And so they hang with people who just reinforce their worldview and their beliefs, and it multiplies. And I think it just grows inside of them to the point where they're in their SUVs, and instead of going to Mahjong or pickleball lessons, they now go and they, you know, save people who need them. They're white saviors, the liberal white woman savior complex. But they're saving people who are wanted for crimes, for assaulting children. And when they're told that, if you've ever seen the videos of them being told this by an ICE agent, they're like, that's not true. That's not true. He's like, how do you know who we're going after? How do you know? I don't know when they wake up. I really don't. So Tom Homan was talking about Minnesota, because apparently they want reparations. Waltz and Fry want money. They want reparations for the damage that was done to Minnesota. You know, the rioting and all that stuff that was done, the destruction of their cities. But because it's Donald Trump and ISIS' fault. So here's Tom Homan responding to that.
And what did the state of Minnesota break? They were a sanctuary state. Their county jails weren't worthless across the state. So you know what? We fixed it. They ought to be saying thank you. The state's safer because of that. And President Trump gets another win. President Trump gets a win every day. Every day he's winning. Yeah. And I'm just proud to be a small part of this administration.
Yeah. But yet, do you see the polls? If you look at the polls, there was just a poll that just came out. I forgot who did it, but they found that people who were surveyed said that President Biden was a better president than Donald Trump. But yet, if you ask them if you dig down in and you say, okay, well, who do you think is better on controlling the border, President Biden or President Trump? They'll say President Trump. Who do you think is better on the economy, President Biden or President Trump? President Trump. Who do you think is better with reducing the flow of drugs into the country, President Biden or President Trump? They'll say President Trump. But then when you ask them overall who was the better president, they'll say Biden. And I think that this is part of it, because if Biden had closed the border, it wouldn't, they like that, it would have been front page news. It would have been just shouted over and over and over again, so that you got the message and you hear it loudly enough and often enough, then, oh yeah, it must be true. Same thing with immigration, getting rid of criminal illegals in your community, getting them out and making your community safer. That would be everywhere. And you would believe it. A lot of people would believe it because they just believe what they're told. If they hear it often enough and you know, loudly enough, they just believe it. Now, there are states like New Jersey and New York, and Virginia, because, you know, we've got, again, white liberal women as our governors. Yay us. And they're crazy. And so they're working to, we're not going to, especially here in New Jersey, Mikey Sherrill, she's a helicopter pilot. Yay. We're not going to work with ICE. And she's making that mandatory across the state that we're not going to work with ICE. So New York doing the same thing. And Tom Homan discussed that as well on Fox and Friends Weekend.
Well, New York State's my home state. And look, Governor Hochul, play the tape. She said for the last 6 months, ICE should be concentrating on criminals and forget about everybody else. ICE should be concentrating on criminals. Then she locks us out of the jails? She can't square that. Mm. Just politicians. It's politics at its worst. They're putting politics ahead of public safety, bottom line.
Yeah, that's all they're doing. That's all they're doing. They're appeasing the far left part of their party. And we see it more and more, but I just love that, for instance, like Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, we knew what we were getting. Like, we knew it. There, it's not a surprise at all. But for some reason, voters in Virginia are shocked that Abigail Spanberger is, like, as far left as she is. But she said, she told us she was a moderate. And I'm like, okay. You know, did you believe the man in the van who told you he had candy and a puppy? No, of course you didn't. But you believe her because she told you she had candy and a puppy, and now you're shocked that she doesn't have candy and a puppy. She's got a bunch of illegal immigrants right there for you in the van. So, you know, it's just amazing to me that people don't really pay attention. I can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on. All right, we've got a lot more coming up, so don't go anywhere. 866-408-7669 if you want to jump in, or you can tag me on a post in X at Mary Walter Radio. We're coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think we need to call it for what it is.
Secretary Clinton.
There is a legitimate reason to have a debate about things like migration. It went too far. It's been disruptive and destabilizing, and it needs to be fixed in a humane way with secure borders that don't torture and kill people.
What? Where's Hillary Clinton and what have you done with her? Yeah, Hillary Clinton, she was in Germany, in Munich, at the conference in Munich, which a lot of Democrats went to. Did you notice that? There were a lot of Democrats there. Why was AOC there? And she's a big dummy. She never should have sat there at a world, you know, like a world conference and try to answer questions about the world, because it went horrifically sideways. Entertainingly, but I had no idea what she was talking about. She has, without the left, the same cadence and hand gestures. They all must take these women and send them all to the same training camp on how to speak and express themselves, because they're very good with cameras. They know how to look in a camera. They're very good with speaking, but they're not very good with actually making a point. And John Fetterman, who is sometimes painful to listen to, and I get it. I'm not mocking him. I understand why. Okay, he's got a medical thing going on. I get it. But he makes more sense when he eventually gets it out than AOC or Kamala Harris, etc., that entire crew. He makes far more sense. And I never had John Fetterman being a more reliable conservative vote than Thomas Massie. And did anybody see that coming? Like, what is going on? It's like the world turned upside down. It makes me kind of think that Washington, D.C. is a portal to hell. And there's all sorts of demons coming up and baiting their bodies. So we do have, I think Tom Homan addressed this in one of the clips we played earlier, but this is CBS News admitting that in 2025, almost 3 in 10 deportation cases ended with illegal aliens choosing to self-deport. Yes, it's the highest share of self-deportation on record. That figure only appears to be climbing as the Trump administration's immigration crackdown widens and detention populations swell, CBS News reported. The percentage of voluntary departures among those detained grew nearly every month of 2025, reaching 38% in December. Go home for the holidays. The analysis does not include those who were not given a hearing before an immigration judge, such as immigrants in expedited removal proceedings. Now, they upped the stipend. They upped the, you know, the care package you get to take home with you, you know, your parting gift, up to $2,600, in addition to the free flight home. And officials have said about 2 million illegal aliens have self-deported this year. In Trump's first year of his second term, data from Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the foreign-born population has declined by 2.3 million, which is a complete reversal from the Biden administration, when the foreign-born population grew by 7.4 million in just 4 years. So Trump has a way to go. He's got a ways to go in order to turn this around, but hopefully he will be able to do that. Over on X, Joe Forth and husband texted me, tagged me in a post and said, "Glad to hear your voice this morning, but you're right. Our attention span is shorter than a golden retriever puppy. We moved on from the fraud cases in Minnesota, right? What happened to them? And we moved on from Ilhan Omar's getting sprayed hoax. That was on the news and out. They are phenomenal at controlling the message. The media is so in their pocket. That whole Ilhan Omar getting sprayed thing, and it was vinegar, and she, that, I'm sorry, that thing was hinky from the get-go, from the jump, that thing was hinky. I looked at that, and I'm like, wait a minute, they didn't clear the room. What if it was a toxic chemical? Wait, she just kept going, and it's all over her shirt, and she wiped at it with her hand. Like, why would you do that if you don't know what it is? They didn't call for medical attention, nothing. And sure enough, gone. Just gone. I totally forgot about that. It is crazy how we just move on. Now, I just want to get to this very quickly. This is a really interesting piece. This is a guy who owns a restaurant, a Mexican restaurant in Catalina, Arizona. And his name is Jorge Rivas. And he serves free meals to law enforcement. And he's been doing this for years. And somewhere along the line, he said he's been doing it for about 5 years. And somewhere along the line, someone asked him, well, would you do it for ICE too? And he said, sure, why not? Here he is telling his story about why he does this and why he does it for free.
We've been doing it for about 5 years. And the reason is because even back then, I noticed how many people were mistreating law enforcement. And I feel that law enforcement, they deserve our respect and they deserve our support, because when we call 911, we expect a guy to come over blazing, ready to defend you, ready to help you. And nowadays, we see so many people out there interfering with their work, Carol, trying to hurt them with their vehicles, pushing them, kicking them. And that, to me, is so uncalled for. So here at Sammy's, we say we are not going to respect our police officers when they come into the building, whether sheriff, police, ICE agent, you name it. We will not only welcome them into our building, but also they have the option not to pay for the meal. In other words, they can get a free meal, not because we think that they cannot afford it. It's just because we feel that the need to say, thank you. We're thankful. We're grateful for who you are, what you do.
We're thankful. We're grateful. And by the way, that was not us talking there. That was the local news station. They had someone else talking in the feed. And he said he has faced backlash. And he said there were some politically motivated efforts to harm his business online. But he received angry phone calls, negative reviews. But he said the tide has turned. At the beginning, we had a whole lot of negativity. But in the last few days, a lot of great patriots are coming over. And he said that many Americans privately agree with supporting law enforcement, but they're afraid to speak up. He said some people are afraid to say what's right, but we're not. And this just, I have a theory that the farther you get away from your family's immigration story, you don't know it. You don't hear the stories of why your ancestors left their country and came to America a lot of times with nothing and worked hard. And when you don't know that story, I don't think you appreciate what you have here. My grandparents, I know their immigration story. I heard it all, and they wanted to just be American. They totally embraced American culture, you know, speaking English. You couldn't speak German in the house, German only in the house, not in public, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And they loved this country. And I think that we don't, as citizens, we don't do a good job of sharing those stories. We're not good stewards of that story of how your family got here. And we don't share it with the younger generation. And they don't appreciate it. I think maybe that's something we could do to turn that around. I'm Mary Welcher. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you? I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian today. Brian is back with you tomorrow. He's off on his book tour, so he'll be back with you tomorrow as he travels around. Coming up later this hour, Ohio State Representative Josh Williams will be joining us. He is running for the U.S. House, and we're going to talk about bills he's sponsoring to end sanctuary cities in his state. I have a lot of comments for him. Joining us right now, Donna Rotunno. She is a criminal defense attorney. You can follow her on X at Donna Rotunno, T-R-O-T-U-N-N-O. Donna, oh, she's not here. We're getting her. She'll be joining us. Sorry, I jumped ahead of myself. I apologize. Oh, she's here? Oh, I didn't see her on the line. Oh, she said, Donna, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course.
I see you everywhere on the channel. You're just everywhere. So good for you. Congratulations. Clearly, you're very good at what you do.
Thank you.
All right. So we have to talk about Nancy Guthrie. And I'm going to be honest, and I'm not trying to be unfeeling and cold or anything, but I'm kind of over it.
I get that. I think that is a sentiment of many people that stopped me about this for sure.
Yeah, I just feel like every time I hear this, I'm like, imagine someone who has a missing loved one, like a child or a parent or something, and they're not getting the same coverage and they're not getting the same resources. Like, how do they feel when they see this? And I get it, it's Savannah Guthrie, she's probably, but it kind of eats at me a little bit in that way. And part of it for me also is, do we give out too much information? Like, now we know that they found, you know, they told us that they found DNA in the house. I'm like, why would you tell us that? Because if they're so close to the border, if I was the person who did this, I would have beat feet across that border a while ago when I know all the things that they're finding. Do you know what I mean? Are we telling too much?
I think it goes both ways. I think we can argue they're telling us too much. I think we can also argue they're not telling us enough. I mean, this is something that's been in the news now for 15, 16 days. And we really don't have a lot of guidance in terms of where this thing is truly going. Yes, we know they found a glove. Yes, they know that they said there was a DNA hit. But you have to remember, it doesn't necessarily mean it ties to this. They want to believe it does, because when we see the video of the person on the porch, it looks like that glove matches. But does that mean it's the same glove? Does that mean that whatever DNA they find actually ties back to this? So I'm not so sure. I think a lot of what we're being told is, you know, skepticism and a lot of, I don't know, hoping that something is true rather than knowing for sure it's true. I mean, they're giving us different stories every time we turn around. First, we're told that she went to church. Then we were told that, no, she goes and watches church at a friend's house
right.
on live stream. First, we're told her son-in-law dropped her off. Then we're told, no, it was a family member. Then we're told they think it's a home invasion gone bad. Now we're being told, no, 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 we don't know where that came from. So the information that we are getting isn't very reliable to begin with. So I think that's part of the fatigue of this. Not only is it in the news nonstop, but when it is in the news, we're not sure what we're hearing is actually what's really going on.
Yes. And part of me feels like, for the people who love this stuff, and believe you me, I'm a big Forensic Files fan. I think I've seen all of them. And Scary People with Donnie Wahlberg, totally my jam, but sometimes I get scared. So I get it. It kind of feeds that part of people who loves this stuff. But I think it also fatigues a lot of people because it's just this constant flow of information on it. And I think people get like, okay, you know what? Let me know when you found her.
Yes. And I think for people who really watch the news, you know, the 24-hour news junkies, they're the ones that are saying, okay, every show I watch, I'm hearing the same thing over and over again. I think that really what this has done is this has brought people to the news that aren't necessarily news watchers, people who love true crime that don't necessarily love every other aspect of news. So I find that aspect of it interesting. And so I'm sure from a ratings perspective, it's a great story. But at the same time, you may be losing those that are tuning in every day.
Yeah. Now the latest thing is, you know, they found these gloves like 2 miles from the scene,
yes.
Right? 2 miles from, and that could be anybody's glove,
sure.
Right? Contractors store everything in the back of their pickup truck, and then when they get home, there's nothing back there. There's no garbage because it just blows out along the way,
yes.
Which is an incredible, ingenious way of getting rid of your garbage. But so they did find a glove in the house. Again, I don't think we need to know this. I don't think they should be telling the criminal, by the way, we got your glove. I just don't think that that's a good thing. But they did it, so They're smarter than I guess.
Yeah, but what they're saying, though, aren't necessarily the gloves that match. They found a bunch of gloves in the house, which could have been anything. So I think that was kind of a nothing story, frankly. I think it came out that they found gloves, but not one that necessarily matches the other glove.
Well, maybe then I have news, breaking news here, because on the Fox News website, under 3 hours ago, an FBI spokesperson told Fox News Digital yesterday that a glove with a DNA profile of an unknown male was recovered is different from the other gloves that have been found and appears to match the gloves the subject was seen in wearing in the surveillance video.
I thought that had to do with the glove on the side of the road, because that glove has been being tested, and that glove didn't match what was in the house, and that they did get a hit on that glove. So maybe I was reading that wrong, but that's the way I understood that, but I guess we'll hear more today.
But here we go. Yeah, nobody knows.
It's not
right?
clear, right? So they
it's
sent
not
that glove.
Clear.
They sent the glove from the side of the road to a lab in Florida, and that glove is the glove that they're saying matches what's on the camera. They believe that matches what's on the camera, but they never found a glove that matched that in the house. They found other gloves in the house, but I live in Chicago. If you come to my house, you're going to find a lot of gloves in the house because it's cold and we wear them. So,
exactly.
We did see a picture of some of the gloves that they did find, and they did look like more, cold weather type gloves. So the way I read that was this glove that's being tested had a hit for unknown male DNA. But again, that can be any person. And like you said, could it be a contractor whose glove blew out of the, or somebody who was, walking around and a glove fell out of their pocket. So again, who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think what they're doing now is that glove that did get the hit that was being tested, I think they're waiting for those preliminary results, and then they'll put it in that CODIS system, which is the FBI system, which if your DNA is in the system, there will be a hit. Yeah, and there's other ways to test DNA, which I'm surprised they're not doing yet. The same DNA that was able to, the testing that was able to catch Koberger, which is much different type of DNA testing than the traditional DNA testing that law enforcement has been doing for years. So I think that's going to be interesting, too, because they can get more characteristics out of that IgG testing than they can this traditional DNA testing. So we'll see.
Can't they do both?
They will, and they should be, and okay. I'm surprised they're not doing them simultaneously, because that other testing actually gets you a smaller pool of people faster. It may not take you to the exact person, but it may tell you that it's a male, it's somebody with this color eyes, it's somebody who's related to certain people, depending. Yeah, so that will be interesting. So that's
crazy.
Different than the traditional.
That's why we're never going to have serial killers anymore. Every time I watch Very Scary People with Donnie Wahlberg, I just they're all from the 70s, and they're all from California, by the way. That we're never going to have that again, because the our forensics and cameras and everything else are so crazy now that he's only going to get two murders under his belt, and we're going to have him.
Right.
So I just have one personal question to ask you. So here's my theory. Let me know what you think. I think that this was just a robbery gone bad. Somebody who knows the area, maybe is a worker, knows she has money, knows who her daughter is, because this guy did not seem to be all that together. He picked up weeds. Even I would know, you bring duct tape or something to put over the doorbell, right? So he doesn't seem to be the sharpest tool in the box. So I don't think that this was a kidnapping, because they also don't have video of her leaving, and we know that she left through the front door. Oh, he ripped the doorbell camera out. That's
right,
why.
Right.
But I think that this was a burglary. He was in the house for 40 minutes, and she had some kind of medical incident. Something happened in that house, and this went sideways quickly. And honestly, I personally don't think she's still alive, unfortunately. And I don't think maybe she was alive when they took her out of the house. And can one guy get her out of the house?
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with you that it's something different than what we've kind of been told. The problem is that we don't really know. There are all these potential possibilities, and I would have really agreed with you if I didn't see the pictures of the guy on the porch with this backpack that was looked full.
Yes.
And so the fact that looked full, it would seem weird to me that was a robbery.
True.
Or a burglary, because how are you going to take the proceeds out?
Good
so
point.
Who knows what that was all about? But to me, this was definitely not a kidnapping, ransom, situation. We've never seen a sign of proof of life. The two letters that were sent by the purported kidnapper do not seem like the traditional ransom letters. If you did have somebody alive and wanted money for their return, you'd be reaching out much more frequently. We've heard nothing since those two letters. Again, no proof of life at any stage of this. I would agree with you that seems a little far-fetched at this point.
Yeah, very sad. All right, coming up, because you said you would stay. Thank you so much. Can we talk Epstein?
Sure.
Thank you. All right. So, Epstein next with Donna Rotunno here on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thank you.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade, here with Donna Rotunno, a Fox News contributor, criminal defense attorney. She's also the host of the new Fox News True Crime podcast, Crime and Justice with Donna Rotunno. And as you know, I do love me some true crime, as I was saying. Podcast debuts this Wednesday. And we're going to talk a little bit about Epstein here, and then we are going to delve into this new podcast here with Donna Rotunno. You can follow her on X at Donna Rotunno.
Let's quickly talk about Epstein so we can get into this
true podcast, the true crime podcast with you. So the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, said they have now put out everything. Now, we've heard this before, but that's everything. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we've had 3,000 more pages, so here's everything. And this new list is 300 politicians and prominent people who were named in the Epstein files. Now, what happened was, and they include like Prince Harry and Woody Allen and Mark Zuckerberg, and they made clear that just because your name is in the file, it doesn't imply any wrongdoing or even any direct contact with Jeffrey Epstein. For instance, maybe you met him at a party, he emailed you, you emailed him back like, hey, nice to meet you, that kind of thing. And do you believe that this is truly all of it?
You know, I think it probably is, given the fact that it throws out all these names. I mean, in terms of what they knew as part of investigations, I'm not sure if it's everything that's, you know, that they have known. But in terms of who had contact and who was there and who spent time with him, I think it's probably real. I don't know if I'm like the only person in America that does not care about this story at all. I don't know why. I know some people are so into this. And at this point, I feel like, okay, this was a rich guy that everybody wanted to have contact with for a variety of reasons. And, you know, should there be prosecutions of people who engaged with minors? Absolutely. But that's sort of a different conversation than this release of all of these files to me.
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things that can go wrong with this. And we know that some things have gone wrong with this with Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie. They're really behind this. You got to release everything. Where were these people when Joe Biden was president?
Correct.
Democrats held both the Senate and the House. Where was all of that then? Why is it such a push now? Do you think the left truly believes they're going to get Trump finally?
You know, it's crazy. First of all, if they thought that from the beginning, Joe Biden would have released these things, right? If there was something there, if there was some big smoking gun that was going to take Donald Trump down, Joe Biden would have released these. Obama would have released these. You know, these are things that would have been out in the world long before now. When you look at all the ways they tried to get to Donald Trump and all of the criminal prosecutions and the arrests and the mugshot photos. And if there was something there, I just felt like we would have known. So, you know, to me, and the fact that Trump came out for a long time and said that he would release these files. I think what happened was once he got into office, he realized that there were going to be people in those files that maybe he wasn't aware of. And he thought, you know, I don't want to embarrass these people. I mean, and look, Steve Bannon is one that's mentioned many times, and there's many communications. He is one of the, you know, I think top 10 amount of communications back and forth with Epstein. So again, this is not new news, but it's back in the news. So we'll see if it has any real impact. I just don't see how that's something that impacts midterms. I don't see how any of this story impacts any regular American's life who's, you know, trying to put food on their table and going to the grocery store and paying their energy bills.
Right, but they're not concerned about us, as we all know. And just quickly, we had Thomas Massie and Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna gets on the floor, and he reads these names off of people in these files, and four of them were just part of a lineup that they used. You know, that they were just part. Sometimes you get somebody who's been convicted of a crime, and so you just use their pictures in these lineups. And they reads their names off, and they had nothing to do with this.
Right.
So now Ro Khanna turns around and blames the administration for including their names. They're like, wait a minute, you didn't want any protection.
Right. You wanted it all. You
wanted
everything.
It all.
Yes, exactly. And Trump said there's going to be people who are embarrassed that didn't do anything. He said that initially when he talked about whether it was smart to release or not release these files.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. All right. So, Donna Rotunno.
Yes, thank you.
I apologize.
Okay. That's okay.
Tell us about this new true crime podcast, Crime and Justice with Donna Rotunno. And it's starting Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, and it'll be available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you find your podcast. So make sure you do that. Tell us about this.
Thank you. Well, it's very exciting. For the last 25 years as a lawyer, partially a prosecutor and mostly a criminal defense attorney, I've worked in the largest criminal justice system under one roof in the nation, which is Chicago, Cook County, Illinois. And I've tried cases all over the United States. And now the voice that I've used to defend others is a voice that I get to use to talk to all of you, to talk about true crime cases, talk about the latest in terms of what's happening. I'm going to focus mostly on cases that are currently in the news. There seems to be many these days. We'll be breaking them down. I will have other legal minds on with me to talk about them. And I think it'll be a little bit of a different twist than your average true crime podcast, given the fact that I am a practicing trial lawyer. I finished a jury a week and a half ago. So, you know, this is something that I do on a regular basis. So I'm actually in the courtrooms and feel like I can speak to what truly goes on. So I'm looking so forward to it. Twice a week, Wednesdays and Thursdays, anywhere you get your podcasts and on YouTube. So subscribe for me on YouTube.
Absolutely. So I have a question. So you're going to do all this and you're a lawyer.
Yes.
You're working.
Yes,
and you're all over television. Do you sleep?
Not really.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. My Valentine's Day dinner with my husband and our wonderful friends on Saturday night, I was running outside of dinner to do a TV hit from a studio van. So there's not much of a break in my world, but I'm loving it. I'm loving this aspect of my career and where my career is taking me. And I think it's just a fun way to do it. And we'll see how long I can practice the multiple juries in a year, but I definitely refuse to give it up. That's for sure.
Good for you. And true crime is so hot right now.
Yes.
People are really interested in this stuff because it's fascinating. And again, I think with the technology, these cases, I think, get resolved much quicker than they would have in the past. Super interesting. Crime and Justice with Donna Rotunno. And you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget, subscribe on YouTube and follow her on X at Donna Rotunno, Rotunno. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you, Mary. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. More coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Mary Walter sitting in for Brian. He is back with you tomorrow. Joining us now is Ohio State Representative Josh Williams. He is also a candidate for the U.S. House. You can find him on X at Josh Williams OH for Ohio. And his website is joshwilliamsforohio.com. Mr. Williams, thank you so much for joining me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me on today.
Absolutely. Lots to talk about, because you're spearheading a package of bills that address sanctuary city policies. And you're in Ohio, you're trying to get them, force them, because they won't do it voluntarily, to cooperate with the federal government on, you know, handing over criminal illegals, et cetera, so that you don't wind up, I would assume, like Minnesota. You don't want that. Is that what you're doing in Ohio?
Yeah, so we started this this effort well before we saw what happened in Minnesota. When we saw Donald Trump get elected with a clear voter mandate to have the largest immigration enforcement in our country's history, we knew that there would be sanctuary cities in the state of Ohio who would try to obstruct. Even though we're a Republican-controlled state, we have blue-controlled cities that are going to try to step in the way. So we introduced legislation in anticipation of that, trying to force cooperation. Our mayors came out in heavy opposition very early on, and then as we saw what happened in Minnesota, this is clearly a concerted effort by Democrats to obstruct federal immigration enforcement, and we simply want to make sure that our communities continue to have public safety, that we cooperate with federal enforcement efforts, and we get these criminal illegal aliens out of our communities.
Yeah, let me ask you a question along those lines. Why are cities blue?
Well, I think it's the inside voting pool of urban districts where you get a lot of people since the 1970s hooked on public assistance. You threaten every election cycle that, you know, the Republicans are going to take your public assistance away so you continue to vote Democrat. And essentially, it's this cancer mentality that we have now where everything needs to be provided for free, this victimhood mentality that's in our inner cities. Where the government should be providing every thing that for your sustainability instead of you going out and living the American dream and pursuing your own pursuits.
Yeah, it's interesting because we all say that. We're like, well, it's a city, so it's blue. And when you said that, it just dawned to me. I'm like, wait, why do we always just say that? Why does that always happen? You know, it's interesting. Did those cities cooperate with President Obama when the deporter in chief was taking these people out of jails and deporting thousands and thousands and thousands? Did they cooperate then?
Well, absolutely they did. And I point out that hypocrisy on a daily basis that, you know, under Bill Clinton, under Obama, even under Joe Biden, they were cooperating with federal immigration enforcement efforts. I mean, we saw Obama give national addresses where he talks about, you know, the influx of criminal illegal aliens and how it's harmful to low-income communities, including minority communities. But all of a sudden, you know, when Trump decides to do this effort, it all of a sudden becomes Nazism. And even interesting in the last couple of days is we just watched Hillary Clinton go on a national, international platform and say, you know, that unmitigated immigration is a disaster and that we need to have reasonable immigration policies. And she bragged about how her husband, you know, deported more Americans than Donald Trump. But let's be clear, that's back when they used to cooperate. That's back when it was a universal understanding that we didn't want rapists and murderers in our community and that it was reasonable to take these people out of our jails and deport them when they finally had their due process and got a final deportation order.
So is it because the policy changed, or is it just because it's Donald Trump in office and they hate Donald Trump? So anything he does, they are automatically now against. They don't care about the hypocrisy. You know, Hillary has zero sense of irony at all with what she said. She changes, I think, like every 10 years. The guys here are pointing out that they have audio from her, you know, 20 years ago being for deportation. Yeah. Then she was against it. Now she's for it. That doesn't matter to them. I think it all ties to Trump derangement syndrome, and they just hate Donald Trump so much that even when you tell them policies, these videos where they tell, you know, these liberal women, would you be for blah, 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 and they tell them these policies and they're like, well, what if I told you those were Trump policies? Trump's a racist. Like, they can't. I think it has more to do with Trump, that once Trump's not in office, this changes. What do you think?
Yeah, I think both can be true. I think part of it is the Trump derangement syndrome, but also I think it's political power. I think they realize two important facts. One is that with the prevalence of abortion in the minority community, that basis of their voting base is not going to continue to grow. It's actually going to continue to shrink. With the prevalence of minorities waking up and starting to vote for the GOP, they can't rely on that minority base anymore in order to maintain political power. So they have to import new voters. And three, they also know that after the 2020 election, that the liberal cities and their high tax policies made a lot of Americans move out of those cities, and they lost seats in Congress, and they needed to replace those bodies for the 2030 census. And the only way to do that was to have open border policies like what we saw under the Biden-Harris administration. So I think part of it is a pure hatred for Donald Trump, but two, there's an upper level political pandering that we're seeing from the Barack Obama and the Hillary Clinton and the true establishment of the Democrat Party that are astute enough to realize that their sustainable goal of power, they needed to expand their base beyond minority voters, beyond union voters who they were abandoning with their globalist policies that were shipping middle class jobs overseas. They were going to need to expand their base, and they did it with two groups. One is what I call the Alphabet Coalition, the LGBTQIA plus two-spirit, whatever people they call themselves now. And the other one is these immigrants that are coming over that they let come in record numbers, and now you see this push for amnesty to actually allow them to get citizenship and vote. I think that's their long-term goal, and that's why they did it on top of just a hatred for Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's many layered. And I want to ask you about that since you are running for the U.S. House. But before, two things that I want to ask you about. One of them has to do with Homeland Security. And the Department of Homeland Security is trying to identify Americans who oppose ICE and these ones that have these groups that alert everyone, alert the white liberal saviors where ICE is, and then they go and they follow them and they impede and they blow whistles and they do all this stuff that are organizing that. And what they're trying to do, they have in recent months sent administrative subpoenas from the Department of Homeland Security to Google, Reddit, Discord, Meta, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and they're asking the companies to identify details of accounts that don't have a real person's name attached and that have criticized ICE or pointed to the locations of ICE agents. How do you feel about that? I have very mixed emotions.
Yeah, I'm mixed emotions when it comes to the idea of like, hey, if you criticize ICE, somehow we're going to surveil you. That's a concern for me because I'm, you know, a former constitutional law professor. I believe in free speech. Now, the second portion, I think, is legitimate law enforcement efforts. And that's where you got individuals intentionally obstructing federal immigration enforcement. Even the use of whistles to try to alert criminal illegal aliens of the presence of ICE is obstruction by law. You have people ramming law enforcement officers with vehicles, physically assaulting them. You know, for a long time, that was called domestic terrorism, where you use violence to get your political goals accomplished. So I think that's legitimate to look to investigate those individuals because it's a concerted cooperative effort amongst a group that needs to be identified, because this isn't just about ICE. We saw this with Black Lives Matter. We saw this with the Palestinian protests. Now we're starting to see it with ICE. These are paid protesters. This is an organized criminal organization that is essentially trying to use these topics to drum up support for overthrowing the government and the rule of law. And I think that's legitimate concerns for the Department of Homeland Security. But when it comes to just showing opposition through Facebook comments and things of that nature, I don't think that you should be surveilled because we saw the same thing come from the Biden administration when it came to people that were speaking out in opposition to the COVID vaccine and the COVID lockdowns, and we saw the censorship that came with that. So I don't want the pendulum to swing too far back the opposite direction. We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard than what we saw under the Biden-Harris Democrat administration, where we got to protect free speech, we got to protect the right to assemble. But at the same time, we need to crack down on these foreign investors into chaos in our communities, trying to drum up support for overthrowing the government and the rule of law, like what we're seeing with these ICE protests.
One last question for you. You had talked about, and I'm just going to ask it just because you had mentioned the cities losing their base, right? And you see with Nicki Minaj and the Barbs, like over the last weekend, just have gone crazy with being supportive of MAGA and MAHA. And they were calling all of their representatives to get them to vote for the SAVE Act. And they are all in. And I see the videos all over of Blacks and Hispanics leaving the Democrat Party saying, I have woken up to what they're doing. And they're starting to see it, exactly the point you made. But you've got Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats going all in on gerrymandering, and they're picking up seats all over. And they won on redistricting. redistricting in California. They're trying to push through a ballot initiative, which the Supreme Court in Virginia is going to allow to move forward, this ballot initiative, to potentially give Democrats four more seats. Now they're trying to do it in Maryland, where there's one Republican seat. They want to get rid of that. Why are Republicans so against playing the same game?
I don't know, because I pushed in Ohio here for us to redraw our maps to get us to a 13-2 map here in the state of Ohio. And I wasn't part of the redistricting commission because I'm a candidate for Congress. So some of my colleagues were, and we were unsuccessful, and there wasn't the wherewithal to do that here in the state of Ohio and in other Republican states, because we're essentially attempting to play by the rules. But what this is going to result in is not only is it going to result in more Democrat seats due to this gerrymandering, but we're going to watch over the next 10 years, they lose even more and more influence within the minority community. All we have to do is look to the state of North Michigan. They underwent the same type of gerrymandering in their last allocation of their congressional maps. And the only way to pick up Democrat seats is to go into the black communities, cut that community into a pie and drag it out into the white suburbs. And it resulted in the lowest number of black elected officials in the General Assembly in Michigan. It resulted in the first time in a long time that they didn't have a black member of Congress representing the city of Detroit. And we watched as black Democrats actually sued the state of Michigan for racial gerrymandering. Well, now we know with the Supreme Court's decision, we may get rid of the racial gerrymandering altogether and get it to where you can gerrymander based on political lines. And that's going to disenfranchise a lot of minority communities that are going to be broken apart to benefit the Democrat Party, and people are going to start waking up, and they're going to see that there's a future home for them right here in the GOP.
Yeah, it's. I just wish, you know, Indiana had the chance to do it, and they chose not to. The Republicans in Indiana said, "We're not going to do that." And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes you may not like the game that's being played, but sometimes you have to play it. And you have to play it by your enemy's rules. If they're playing by those rules and winning, sometimes you have to do that as well. And I think a lot of times Republicans are too scared to actually do it. It's like getting rid of the filibuster. I think they're just not going to do it because, well, it's a longstanding tradition and it could be used against us. I'm like, they told you they're going to use it against you. So
yeah,
you know,
I think part of it they're scared, and part of it they have their own internal self-dealings. There's a lot of establishment Republicans that are making their own behind closed door deals in order not to push the maps how far they need to be pushed. I mean, we had an opportunity here in the state of Ohio. We easily could have went to a 13-2 map, maybe even a 14-1, and now we're starting to see other states even push to the 10-1 maps and totally eliminating Republicans. We have to have the wherewithal to do it in our voting base. I mean, Ohio is a Republican-controlled state. We should have been way more aggressive on our maps. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the group dropped the ball on that one.
No, absolutely. Well, Ohio State Representative Josh Williams, good luck with everything. Appreciate it. You can find him at joshwilliamsforohio.com. Also, Josh Williams OH on X. He is running for the U.S. House. So if you are in Ohio, you might want to check him out. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. More coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 is my number, or tag me on a post on X at Mary Walter Radio. Oh, let's go to the phones. Gracie, Rockland County, New York, listening on WABC. Gracie, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, Mary. Listen, Mike, I was very interested listening to your the congressperson, and very interesting, and I liked what he said about the swamp Republicans. They go along to get along, and long as they keep their jobs, they're not following what's best for America. And for me, what's best for America is what Donald Trump's policies are. Now, what was said, Rush Limbaugh, I'm an oldie but goodie. I listened to Rush since he began. Rush always said the Republicans were very happy to be the loyal minority, because that way they could go to the cocktail parties and the Kennedy centers and have the wine and the hors d'oeuvres, and you know what I mean? So therefore, we patriots who care about this country. In my mind, I feel I care about it because I'm 78. I know what was the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and I know people could make it here if they're willing to work. We have to make sure the minority, the majority holds. And that are my thoughts and letting me, yeah. And thank you for letting me make all this noise.
You're so cute, Gracie. No, I agree with you. I think there's some people who just are happy with the status quo. They still get all their perks. Like you said, they're in it for the popularity. They're in it for the power. They're in it for the, you know, I get security. I'm important. It makes them feel important because they were picked last for dodgeball. And so this is how they're finally getting, you know, revenge of the nerds. And I think more so the men than the women are super concerned with just making this their career and just keep getting reelected so that they can become incredibly wealthy somehow, which is odd. And you know, it just makes them feel important. I think you nailed it. Thank you so much, Gracie. Have a wonderful day. Now, I quickly want to go to this. So President Obama was on a podcast, Brian Tyler Cohen's podcast, and he was asked a question. And I want you to listen to his answer. Here it is. It's quick.
Are aliens real?
They're real, but I haven't seen them, and they're not being kept in, what is it?
Area 51.
Area 51. There's no underground facility, unless there's this enormous conspiracy, and they hid it from the President of the United States.
So he said, yes, they're real. Now, a couple days later, President Obama was asked about this. And he walked it back, and apparently there was a lightning round that he has, a speed round, this Brian Tyler Cohen. And Obama said on Instagram, I was trying to stick with the spirit of the speed round, but since it's gotten attention, let me clarify. Statistically, the universe is so vast that the odds are good that there's life out there. But the distances between solar systems are so great that the chances that we've been visited by aliens is low. And I saw no evidence during my presidency that extraterrestrials have made contact with us, really. And Cohen asked what Obama's first question was after becoming president, and he said, where are the aliens? And he was joking about it. So here's the thing. I truly believe we've probably been visited. I'm a big nerd, and so I'm into the archaeology and stuff like that. You look at the Nazca lines, these big lines that you could that make animals, and they go over miles, and you could only see them from the air. Like, how did that happen? The pyramids, how did that happen? So I don't know. I kind of think that maybe they were here, and they got disgusted and left. And just said, yeah, you know, you people are really dumb, and so we're out. Which I can't blame them for something like that. So Obama thinks there's aliens.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. You can find me on X at Mary Walter Radio, no S. And also my podcast is every Tuesday night starting at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can find that on Rumble, YouTube, and Getter. It is live. You can ask questions, leave comments, and sometimes there's guests, sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's political, sometimes it's not. So a lot of input from you guys takes the show a lot of times in very different directions. So please try to join us. And then you can also get the audio on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple, and of course you can watch the video on Rumble, YouTube, and Getter. All right. So I want to share a story with you, and I want to talk to you about the SAVE Act, okay? So I made a phone call. We're going away. We're going to go skiing out west where there's no snow. So that'll be fun. And I made a phone call to this restaurant that we go to quite a bit, and it is not, we don't go to like Colorado where we would expect this. But I think that ski resorts, a lot of times these places just attract a very granola crowd because they go hiking in the summer and fishing, and they backpack and, you know, live off the land and, you know, work minimum wage jobs. They hustle. A lot of them will work several minimum wage jobs, but they're doing it for the lifestyle. All right. So it's kind of a very granola type group of people who work there in any kind of like resort
area for skiing. I don't know, can't speak for anything else, but for skiing. So I called this restaurant last week to make a reservation. Now, everybody's like, why did you call? Yes, some people still have to call restaurants because not every restaurant's on OpenTable, and not every restaurant has an automated system, especially the more seasonal restaurants, where it says on their website, please call for reservations. Okay, great. Because I'm sure some days the chef just doesn't show up because the powder is great and so he's skiing. So I called to make a reservation, and the woman was very nice who answers the phone. And we're to the part where I have to give her my name for the reservation. And we go to this restaurant. We try to go there every time we're out there because the food's really good. And so I gave her my name and she says, oh, that's such a nice, easy name. And I was like, thank you. And I joked around. I said, yeah. And I make this joke all the time. I'm like, yeah, that's why I didn't change my name when I got married, because my husband's last name is Italian. And I always wind up having to spell it and people still get it wrong. They still get it wrong no matter what. And so Mary Walter, super easy. The most they do is put an S on the end of it. I have family from my husband's side who will put an S on the end of it. Fine, whatever. But that's the worst that it gets, right? So that's why I always say Mary Walter, no S. Mary Walter Radio, no S. There's only one of me. That's the farthest it has to go. I don't have to spell it, all right? And so I joke, and her response, and I kid you not, this is a hand to God true story. She says to me, ugh, you're so lucky you didn't change your name when I got married. I did, and now I can't vote. And I was like, oh. So now, all of a sudden, like, red flags are flying all over the field. And I immediately, I took a breath because I panicked, like, and I'm like, do I take the bait? Is this going to be worth it to take the bait? And she was very nice. And so I said, well, why can't you vote? I said, she goes, oh, well, you know, this new law that they want to put through, if you're married and you have to change your name on your birth certificate, and it's really hard to do that. And I don't have my birth certificate. I said, well, do you have real ID? Because something like 81% of Americans have the real ID. It's over 80%. I said, do you have your real ID? She goes, no, not yet. And I go, and I was like, oh, okay. And cause she also told me, like, somewhere along the line, she doesn't have the original copy of your marriage certificate, which, by the way, people, I did not know this, but if you just have your marriage certificate from, like, the church that you got married in, that's not the same as a notarized copy from the state. So I don't even think we have a real marriage certificate. Not that I need it to change my name, but I think we just have the one from the church. But anyway, fun detour. Okay. So she says, I don't have the original copy of my marriage certificate. And I'm like, well, okay, well, I'm sure you can get a notarized copy. It's not that hard. I'm trying to help her through this and not say what my brain is screaming inside. And I'm trying to be an adult and be nice because, you know, they can mess with my food. And she goes, well, that costs money and disenfranchises people. And I said, well, you said you're getting your real ID. You haven't gotten it yet, but you know, you're going to need a lot of the same paperwork to get your real ID, which is why I asked. And then, you know, you can use that ID to vote. And she goes, well, it's still it's a tax on women. And I didn't say anything. And I was like, oh, you know, well, I just kind of like just backed off. And then I think the lightning bolt hit her like, oh my gosh, I'm at work. This is an inappropriate conversation to be having with someone I don't know. And she just turned on a dime, was super nice. She goes, all right, well, your reservation's made and have a safe trip out here. Like, it was nice as pie, like the way it all started out. So I got to ask you, 866-408-7669. Am I the only person that these weird conversations happen to? Or are there so many, and I'm sorry, white women in this country who can't think for themselves, just believe all the propaganda that comes down the pike. They just believe it hook, line, and sinker. And I didn't even get to the part to tell her, well, it's only if you have to register to vote. It's not to vote. Like, if you move, then you're going to need it to register in a new state. Yes, you will need that information. But other than that, you know, you're fine. If you don't move and you have an ID, picture ID from your state, you're fine. I didn't even get there because I know, like, at this point in the game, it doesn't matter. Like, you could tell them anything. I could have told her, well, you don't need it to vote. It's just to register. And she would have said, well, it's still a tax on women, whatever she would have said. So, you know, you can't get through. And when did this happen? Like, what went wrong with white liberal women? Like, when did this happen? Was it over pickleball? Was it Wine Wednesday with the Wine Mommies? What was it that the something snapped inside their brains? I know women. I know people like this who were normal. Normal women could function in society. Smart women could think for themselves. And they're the same people who tell me that, well, you didn't vote for Kamala Harris just because she's a woman. And then will also tell me that women don't have the ability to get to register to vote because they don't have their paperwork. So are women incredibly stupid and disorganized and incapable, or should I elect them to run the country? And I will get the same thing out of the mouths of liberal women that I used to know, because they either unfriend me or I just choose to just stay away because I'm afraid it might be contagious. I find it crazy. So here's the thing. Let's go to Cut 11, because this is Senator Alex Padilla out of California. And this is part of the problem. It's the misinformation, the lies, not misinformation. They're just flat out lies that come from the left. And is this all they hear? Is that why these women act this way? Here's the senator.
To insist on bringing your birth certificate or a passport. A lot of Americans don't even have a passport because not everybody travels internationally. It's the equivalent of a show me your papers law to be able to exercise your fundamental constitutional right to vote. And who would be impacted? You know, the SAVE Act may sound good in some quarters. You know, one big example is what you just said. A woman who may choose to change her name when she gets married, all of a sudden her birth certificate name is different than her ID, and that becomes a problem. It's never been a problem. It isn't a problem. Or what about people who live in rural areas, have to make their way to a county courthouse to verify their registration?
Oh my gosh, they have to get to a county courthouse. Oh no. And again, it's only if you're re-registering to vote. It's not when you vote. If you have a picture ID from your state, that's all you have to present to vote. But it's the Democrats doing what they've done in the past. Remember, they didn't want blacks to vote. That's why we were told they're too dumb to vote. Black people can't vote. They're too dumb. We can't let them have the vote. Same thing with women. We can't let women have the vote. They're too stupid. And so they say these things, and, you know, he implied there, he inferred that, you know, having your last name on your birth certificate being different than the name on your ID. Well, somehow that same woman managed to change her name on her ID to her married name by presenting her marriage certificate. So it can be done, sir. This is the problem, but I just don't understand where women just lost the ability to rationally reason and infer for themselves and just became programmed to spit out the dopey talking points. 866-408-7669 is the number. Let's quickly go to Marianne in Jacksonville, and then we'll take a quick break. Marianne, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Good.
Good. I started off by saying to him, I'm originally from New Jersey, and I love listening to you because you almost have to be there, to live there, to yes. understand where you're coming from. They are, it's just a real quick story. My friend lives in Monmouth Beach, and she was telling me yesterday, she was so excited she got a $600 check. I said, from disability, because she had surgery. And she said, no, they're sending checks out. This is true. Sending checks out to people to encourage them not to move. And there's another one coming in a couple of months.
Well, I don't, listen, that's the New Jersey Homestead Act. And is she a senior?
Yes, but she
yeah, she's a senior, and you can only it's for quote unquote low income, which in New Jersey is low income. Stupid.
She's not low income.
Well, I don't know how she got it then, because I looked at the cutoff for that, because I had been talking to a friend about that, and
right.
There are income cutoffs. So clearly,
okay.
She and her spouse make less than the
one.
Income cutoff, and so are considered quote unquote low income with the money that they're bringing in now. It doesn't matter what you have in the bank; it's the money you're bringing in
okay.
now. So yeah. So
okay.
yeah. But they are doing that in New Jersey to keep seniors because they don't want them to move out to Florida like you.
I said to her, this is like reparations. I said, you're like getting reparations. And she goes, I am not. I go, yeah, actually you are. But on this girl that you were talking about, like how old do you think she was?
Oh, I would probably say she's probably... No. She was probably in her 30s, somewhere in her 30s, 40s,
really?
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like I said, first of all, if she has, like you said, she has a license username that's on there for now. But this is not rocket scientist, which is why she's taking reservations at a restaurant. No offense. You know, there's... I wouldn't have been as kind as you because I am from New Jersey. I would have said, what is the matter with you? How can you not figure this out? So you're a better person than I am.
You know what, Marianne? You don't live here anymore. It is a constant minefield. It is constantly in my brain going, shut up, right? Because I don't have the time. And I know that nothing's going to change. So what's the point? What is the point? You just walk along and be stupid. If we could put a big S on their foreheads or a big L for liberal, it would make my day so much easier because I just would avoid them totally. But it is what it is. Marianne, thank you so much for joining me. You're a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much and have a great week. More coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Keeping you informed, engaged, and always a step ahead. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, about 83% of the American people, including majority Democrats, support voter ID laws.
Well, yeah, the voter ID laws that, first, each state can have its own voter ID laws, and some do and some don't. But secondly, what they are proposing in this so-called SAVE Act is like Jim Crow 2.0. They make it so hard to get any kind of voter ID that more than 20 million legitimate people, mainly poorer people and people of color, will not be able to vote under this law. We will not let it pass in the Senate. We are fighting it tooth and nail. It's an outrageous proposal that is, you know, that shows the sort of political bias of the MAGA right. They don't want poor people to vote. They don't want people of color to vote because they often don't vote for them.
You know who that was, Chuck Schumer. He should know all about Jim Crow 2.0 because who were the architects of Jim Crow? Oh, wait, Democrats were. The Democrats were. I guess he should recognize it when he sees it, right? Mm-hmm. No, Democrats are absolutely terrified that people of color, you know, blacks and Hispanics, but a lot of blacks waking up to what they have been sold their entire lives and saying, wait a minute. They're starting to say, wait, because I'm black, I'm too dumb to be able to do function in society and get an ID. No, I have an ID. You need an ID to get benefits. Now, it's not the same ID. It's not if you have to register, it's a bigger hoop to jump through. Because right now, do you know New Jersey, you can register to vote online? My husband renewed his driver's license online and there's a little box. Would you like to register to vote? And all you have to do is click the little box that say, I swear that I'm a citizen under penalty of perjury. That's it. Sure, register me to vote. They don't even have to look at you. Doesn't matter. We have to stop that. And the vast majority of Americans feel that way. But this idea that women can't get an ID and black people can't get an ID has become firmly entrenched because the Democrats lie about it because they want to scare you into, I guess, continuing to vote Democrat. 866-408-7669 is my number if you'd like to join me. If you can't get on the phone and you would like to comment, just tag me in a post on X at Mary Walter Radio. Let's go to Georgia and welcome Kathy. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling because I'm adopted and my original birth certificate is sealed and gone. So I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get a real ID.
Do you have now my brother's adopted and my cousin's adopted and my aunt's adopted. And did you get paperwork that I know my brother, my cousin were adopted from Catholic Charities and my parents got paperwork for him.
Yes.
And that shows where he was born, the state he was born in and, where he was born. So they got that paperwork. You don't have that?
I don't.
Did your parents not give it to you?
They passed, and I was never able to find it.
Well, so how did you register to vote the first time? Because I had to show proof of, I had to bring my birth certificate to register in New Jersey when I got my driver's license.
back then I had a passport. My parents were still, you know, around. I had
How did you get a passport?
I don't know. My parents did it for me because I was 12 when I got my passport.
So they had to have the paperwork. They just didn't give it to
you. They must have. I know, yeah. But they did. And I inherited the house, so I did not find anything like that.
Interesting. Yeah, so, it's sad that they didn't give you that paperwork because now it's left you with a lot of work on your end because they didn't give you that paperwork. And I get that it's something that you just don't think of asking for. When each one of us turned 18, our parents gave us, you know, your birth certificate and stock certificate, all that kind of stuff, and said, it's up to you to manage this now. And that was that. And my brother got his papers. So, yeah, I'm sad that you have to go through that now to try to recreate the wheel. And I don't even know how you do it, but I do think you're in the minority when it comes to something like that. Just don't move out of Georgia and you'll be fine because you're registered to vote there, I would assume. So just don't do that. Thank you so much for joining me, Kathy. Anthony on X says, pushback on the SAVE Act is stupid. Someone should offer an amendment to make passports 100% tax deductible. Kick the chair out from under the false cost argument. You know what, though? I don't want to pay for people to get new birth certificates or marriage certificates or whatever it is because they weren't responsible with the paperwork that they had. Right? I don't know. Is that wrong? All right. We've got more coming up, including Majority Whip Congressman Tom Emmer joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Mary Walter sitting in for Brian. Brian is back with you tomorrow. Joining us now is Majority Whip Congressman Tom Emmer. You can find him on X at GOP Majority Whip Congressman. Thank you for taking the time to join me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
You're doing great. Good to be with you, Mary. Happy President's Day.
That's right. You know, I have to tell you, I saw the best meme on X, and it was an American flag, and they had one extra star there. Just kind of like sitting out into one of the red stripes, and it said, "Happy Flag Day, Canada."
That's great.
I thought that was fantastic. All right, so there's so much to talk to you about. I want to start off talking about Judge Boasberg. Can we talk about him? And it ties in with your testimony that we saw last week in front of Congress, because Judge James Boasberg has now decided, he did this on Thursday, that the Trump administration has to facilitate the return back to the United States of approximately 135, give or take, illegal aliens that were deported who are suspected of being members of TDA, and they were deported. Remember, Trump said, sorry, they're already on the plane, can't turn it around. He is so determined to, I think, impose his will over the president when it comes to immigration. Does he even have the jurisdiction? Is this in his authority to do this?
Well, it's a great question, and I would go back to the fact that the judicial branch of government, so they teach us when we're young, Mary, they're supposed to anyway, they used to. They teach us the three different branches, right? The legislative branch, the executive branch, the judicial branch. And for years, Democrats are like, oh, they're three co-equal branches. No, they're not. The strongest branch of government is the legislative branch. That's where everything's supposed to originate. That's where the laws are created. The next strongest is the executive branch. But really, all the executive can do if our constitutional republic is operating according to the document that created it is just veto things that the executive disagrees with. The least powerful branch of government is supposed to be the judicial branch. Why is it the least? Because all a judge is supposed to do is apply the facts as are presented to the law as it exists. People like Judge Boasberg have given the bench a bad name because they keep trying to legislate from the federal bench. And that is a real problem that has to be addressed.
Yeah, but and he's doing it. And we know that the left had just loaded up the judiciary on state and local levels with these radical leftist activist judges who are part of the robed resistance, and they are more than happy to play their role in the robed resistance because you can't remove them. These people have become an unelected fourth branch of government because they know they are above the law. So how does Congress change that and make them susceptible to the same rules that the rest of us have to live by?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things I can talk about, but I'll start with the most basic one, funding. Our job in the House of Representatives, that's where all funding is supposed to originate. And over 30 years, because of a federal government that operates through the executive by pen more and more with each passing year, you get all these continuing resolutions. You don't get a regular order, as it's been described, where you literally pass the appropriations bills out of the subcommittees through the main committee and then onto the House floor and over to the Senate. They in turn pass them, and the president signs them into law. Because we have lost that function, and it's being restored very slowly, but it is being restored, you got to take back the power of the purse, Mary, because they fear nothing except for their funds, except for their money. So the U.S. House of Representatives, to be very exact, as opposed to Congress, needs to take back its power over the purse. It needs to hold these different agencies responsible. And for the federal bench, I mean, they'll make an argument about separation of powers, but that's not what we're talking about. If you're not going to do the job that you were appointed to do, and that is namely applying the law as it exists to the facts that are presented, if you think you're going to be a pseudo-legislator, then Congress needs to deal with that.
Now, you were just talking about the process and how things are supposed to work. And it seems as if the part of the process now is to shut the government down if you don't get your way. That's what we do now. We shut the government down if we don't get our way, and then blame the other side for it. And Republicans have done it, but they don't do it as much as Democrats, and they don't really get any traction being able to blame the Democrats for it. How much of an effect would getting rid of the filibuster have in restoring the process to normal order? Because the filibuster is just a common, it's not a law, it's not a rule, it's kind of like a nicety. It's something that you've done for a long time, and nobody has to stand anymore. Now you just have to clock in every now and then. We don't go back to the standing filibuster. How much would getting rid of that improve things?
Well, that's a great question, because from my perspective, I'm in the House. I'm not responsible for the filibuster, but right. I know what a lot of my colleagues have been calling for. I know what a lot of certain senators have been calling for, and I know exactly what the President of the United States has been calling for. You got 77 million people who elected Donald J. Trump to do the things that he promised to do when he was on the campaign trail. It is incredibly frustrating when the president tries to move those things that are going to make America healthier again, that are going to make America more safe again, that are going to make Americans and America more wealthy again and prosperous. And you have seven senators who stand in the way and hold it up, all because of something called the filibuster. I think the biggest risk to getting rid of the filibuster as a observer from the House side is we have 50 plus one votes. We probably want to know that, right? Will certain senators stand with the team and vote for the things that Americans voted us all into office for, or will they not? I think it's worth finding out. Mary, I do. Yep. And this is why the president is so frustrated.
Well, to be honest with you, the rank and file are frustrated as well. And I'll tell you, I am not a registered Republican. I've never associated with a party. I lean right, but I get so frustrated by the Republicans' refusal to fight to win. It drives me crazy, and I'm not fighting. I'm not going to sign up for a team that doesn't fight. And Democrats have flat out told us that when they get in power, the first thing they're doing is they're getting rid of the filibuster. They're expanding the Supreme Court to 13. They're making Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. state, and there will never be another Republican in my lifetime. I mean, there'll never be another Republican president in my lifetime, because they plan on doing it, and they have told us that. So in my brain, I'm like, all right, you've got the game plan for the enemy. Why don't we thwart that and do it first? And I just, the lack of Republicans to want to do that just boggles my mind.
Well, Mary, first off, they already would have done it. But for Kirsten Sinema and yes. Joe Manchin, this would have been history already. Yep. There is no question. I've told the president this. They will do it if they ever get back a majority in the Senate. That will happen. But when you talk about the fighting, while I agree with you, we've got to fight. But we've got to fight for purposes of winning. You got to win. When you hear me hesitate at all, it's only because I got enough of my hands full handling what's going on in the House with literally no extra votes at this point. And we're still succeeding. We're still winning. This is a challenge that the Republican-controlled Senate has, and I think this is one that they need to answer for. I think the president has given them a menu of things that he would like to see done. By getting rid of the filibuster, which most Americans agree with. He'd like to see voter identification in order to vote, proof of citizenship, which we have a bill over there now. But they should bring that up and pass that right away. More than 70% of Democrats, Mary, support being required to show a photographic ID to vote. This is insane. By the way, Democrats are now out saying that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers need to ID themselves. Well, okay, there's a little intellectual inconsistency there. You want the law enforcement to provide ID, but you don't want voters voting in elections to provide IDs. It's all insane. I agree with you. We cannot stand down. We need to continue to pound the ground and pound the message and win. The Senate's going to have to clean up its own act. It's had this process for years, and I know some people just bury their head in the sand and say, well, they're going to be nice, Mary. They'll be nice. Right. No, they won't. No, they won't.
No, they're not nice. Stop. You're absolutely right. These people need to, Republicans need to toughen up. And I just very quickly, because I know we got to go, but one of the people I was talking about, an incident, a conversation I had with someone, making a reservation, who said my name is very nice because it's so easy and she can't vote now because, you know, she changed her name. But anyway, it was very odd. What someone said, why don't we just waive the fee to get your ID for to get your passport for a year? Waive the fee for a year, because then you can't say it's a poll tax. And the same people who scream about that are all for poll taxes to taxes in order to exercise your Second Amendment rights. But that's another conversation. Get rid of that for 1 year. Say, okay, you want a passport? 1 year, it's free. And then they can't complain. You get rid of that argument and you leave them dead in the water. And I don't like paying for it, but I think that may be a good idea. Maybe that's something that we can do.
Well, it might be, but I want to throw something out. Forgive me. But, my wife, my daughter, who I consider incredibly smart people, the women that I serve with in the U.S. House of Representatives on the Republican side are brilliant. I'm going to tell you this. The argument by Democrats that somehow women are not smart enough to figure out how to prove their citizenship. Everybody knows if you've been married that you not only would bring a passport or a birth certificate, but you bring your marriage certificate. And you know what, Mary? You could also bring your Social Security card, which gets issued with your new name immediately after you have been married. So this suggestion that women don't have the ability to figure this out should be offensive to every woman out there when these guys start talking like they don't know how to find their way to the local precinct.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly misogynistic. It's also racist because black people apparently can't do it either. One more quick question, and then I'll let you go, I promise. Hakeem Jeffries has said that he's going all in with money, legal firepower, and political capital to make sure that there is no seat left on the table for Democrats when it comes to gerrymandering. Yet Republicans in Indiana are like, yeah, you know, we're not feeling the gerrymandering thing. Again, incredibly annoying. Will Republicans maybe get on board with this? If Democrats are doing it, you may not like the game. You may not like the way it's being played, but sometimes you got to do it.
They've been doing it for years. What are you talking about? I mean, take a look at Illinois. There's a seat in Illinois that is drawn like a thin line through the center of Chicago. And at some points, I think you can literally stand on one side of the street and look at the the other side of your district across the street. These guys are so full of it. And he's not the minority leader. He's the minority wimp. This guy is not a leader. He's never had the ability. They're finding out very quickly that without Nancy Pelosi, who is truly an enforcer, and there will not be another one, internally, they are falling apart. Externally, people can pretend that things are all good. They're not. You've got the far left attacking the extreme left and the extreme left attacking the less extreme left. It's amazing. Look at all the primaries they've run into. And by the way, with the redistricting thing, they don't even know how to do it. Obama and Holder did a great job. But with Hakeem, these guys have messed up Virginia. Who knows? Maybe a judge will try to be a pseudo legislator there. But if they apply the law, that redistricting scam is truly an unconstitutional approach. They've missed their deadlines. They've tried to create rules where rules do not exist. We'll see what they do. And I think, again, the American public is so much smarter than these guys give them credit for. When you see Hakeem go out there and start talking about how Republicans have been crushed electorally all over the place, who's he talking about? And when he talks about, he's asked if why don't they just abolish ICE, and he won't answer the question. He wants to be on both sides of the question. This is just defund the police, too, for him and his party. This guy is the minority wimp, Mary. He's not a leader.
Well, that may have been my fault. I may have called him the leader by accident. but you call him Dollar Store Obama behind his back, right?
As you get to know me, people will tell you, they'll confirm this for you. I don't say anything behind your back. I say it right to your face.
I love it. Majority Whip Tom Emmer, Congressman, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And go get him.
Thanks, Mary. You too.
More coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. Very quickly, Terry reached out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio, said, I'm so confused. I had to submit a name change to the federal government to file joint taxes with my husband under my married name. Are all these women filing individual rather than joint returns? And Alyssa says, for the woman who called in, who was adopted, said, tell her to go down to Fulton County Courthouse, bring all her documents, and request a record search. I would start there or her parents' county of residence, or you can go the ancestry.com route. There you go. Let's quickly go to William in Columbia, South Carolina. William, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello.
How you doing, ma'am?
Doing great. Go ahead.
I've been listening to this today, and I've heard some crazy.
Go ahead.
About people being disenfranchised from voting, why don't they take it from some of the states that took that into hand? People who say it's too expensive to get their ID. Well, in South Carolina, your state ID is free, and it's not a regular ID. It's a real ID. So the cost is, there's models out there all over the country where your standard state ID is free. My son just put it in Bay's mouth. At 15 or 16, the average teenager gets their driver's license. You have to have all that documentation, and most states today make it so easy to renew that if you're, especially when you're in the military, if you're not in the state, as long as you still can claim that state, they let you do it over online. And guess what? On every form you fill out when you go to the DMV, every time you get your driver's license, what do they ask you? Do you wish to register to vote? A little simple check, and they send you all that information. Your name change is simple. It's as simple to change it one way as it is the other. You just got to provide documents. And the rest of it is more or less, we had going through 100.7 The Point. Kevin went through the other week, and he told, and with the state representative, and let us know that, hey, there are situations where people cannot physically get to the polls or to get this registration. There are alternatives for them, but you got to do the research.
Right, exactly. There are options, but I think people would rather complain because their party told them to complain and told them that they're being disenfranchised, and there's nothing more virtuous on the left than being a victim, right? They get to wear the mantle of victimhood and get to be the center of attention for a while they cry. William, well said. Thank you so, so much for joining me, and kudos to your son for being so smart. Good for him. We were going to play a little AOC for you, but we didn't have time because I thought, well, if we're going to talk about women been being stupid. Let's play some AOC. But we don't have time. And how about this? Kamala Harris leading the polling on the Democrat side for the nomination in 2028. Lord, deliver us. Wow. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.